With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Episode 414 of After the Whistle, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. Stay tuned, by the way, for some special announcements coming from Seneca Resorts and Casinos surrounding March Madness. They have a lot of fun stuff coming up for viewings for the basketball game. So your homework, if you like March Madness, go to SenecaNiagaraCasino.com and go see what they have coming up for March Madness and viewing games. Some very cool stuff. JR joins us, talk about his time in Chicago for the Chelios retirement weekend. Also, what Pat Kane did that night. Is Auston Math, is Pat Kane the greatest American-born player of all time? Another question that'll come up. A topic that I want to discuss. Hypocrisy in hockey as it pertains to fighting and Matt Rempe. Some people out there pissing me off with all of a sudden their fighting fans when fighting didn't fit with their graphs and charts and ways to build a team because you need skill and speed. You don't have room for these types of players. Sidney Crosby did something amazing last night. We'll talk about that if you don't know what it is. And is Brady Tkachuk available? The hockey world rumor mill is just absolutely roaring over this one. I can't see this happening. We'll see what JR thinks. He knows the Tkachuk family. Craig, I can't wait to hear what you have to think. You've been great during this Open. You haven't said a word. Hopefully it stays that way. JR is ready to go. Let's go talk to the always opinionated Jeremy Roenick.
He's lively this morning.
Yeah. Yes, sir. What's happening?
You tell us.
What an amazing just weekend for Chelly. First of all, let's just I've never seen Chris Chelios speak so long in one spot and so well. Usually Chelly is kind of, you know, more soft spoken, like he's his tone is a little bit lower, he's more chill.
I love the way he talks. I mean, I remember talking to him at the PA stuff. It's almost like he can't breathe out of his nose. Hey,
probably can't.
Yeah,
he probably can't. He has a very definitive style of speaking that changes in every situation that he's in. Right? If he's in an event, it's different. If he's in a bar, it's different. If it's in, you know, like it was just totally. And I'll tell you what, it was like the most unbelievable weekend because his dinner easily could have been about $100,000 dinner. So you walk
Come
into
on.
Chicago. Yeah, you walk into Chicago Cut, which is the top steakhouse in Chicago. And he has the whole restaurant just for his people. There's 150 people in Chicago Cut. Every single table. And the big tables had four on it. Seafood towers. Now, you know, these seafood towers are $250 a pop, $300 a pop. I mean, these things have like oysters, clams, lobsters, shrimps, you know, all everything.
Butter. Don't forget the butter.
Listen, it was a four-course meal. They're serving Camus bottles. There's probably 100 bottles of Camus on the tables. If you go there with just your wife and yourself, you're leaving there $600-$550 with a bottle of wine, $600 for two. I mean, that's how.
Yep.
And there's 150 people there, you know, and you look at the people, like only Chris.
So who fit the bill for that, JR? Is that the Chicago Blackhawks or is that Chelly?
I'm going to have to think that because Chelly is at this restaurant 4 days a week, 5 days a week in the bar. He's best friends with the with the general manager, David Flom, who is an amazing man. I would have to think he got a serious discount, but I think Chelly paid for it. And it wouldn't be out of the norm for Chelly to do something like that for his friends, because that's just the type of person he is. And then after the dinner, we went to the Rhino Bar, and he has the whole Rhino Bar to himself. And he had and of course, Eddie Vedder, you know, goes up on stage in this little bar and starts singing. He sings four or five songs for everybody at the Rhino Bar. Eddie sang on Saturday night and sang for an hour on Sunday, in the after party at the arena. Kid Rock got up and sang. You know, Cindy Crawford shoots the puck at center ice and makes the goal.
It scores.
You know, yeah, it scores. John McEnroe was there. Kevin Dillon from Entourage was there. Rodman was there. The only one that didn't show up that said he was going to come was Michael Jordan. And I heard that Jordan said that Jordan found out that there's people telling people that he was coming. And whether this is true or not, I don't know if something happened, but he just decided not to come, which was a bummer because I know Chelly would have loved to have Michael there. This is sick. I mean, the array of hockey guys, right? Brett Hull, Dougie Gilmore, Kelly Chase, Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky, Ty Domi, Brian McCabe, and then a lot of us Hawks that were there. It was
did
just
you say
sick.
Mark Messier? I think you did, but did
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Brian Noonan.
Noons was there.
You know what it
yeah.
is, man? You can throw all the
Mike
greats
Keenan
at
was
me.
There. Mike
you
Keenan
can throw
was there.
All the greats at me, all these legends at me. But when I saw Brian Noonan and then Tony Amani come out with the C yeah. on his jersey.
Awesome.
And,
awesome.
Like, it's just listen, like, you got a nice reception too, JR.
It was loud.
Were you
very
surprised
happy.
By that?
Not really. I've been in that situation a couple times. That the toughest that I got in reception was my first game back in Chicago after I got traded. After it turned 2000, it was pretty easy, and the fans really really accepted me and kind of put everything behind in the past, but I've gone to so many games over the last 20 years and fans see me because I sit in the crowd. I don't sit in a box and hide from everybody. I go right in and people see me taking pictures and signing autographs for the whole game, up and down the aisle in the concourse. I mean, it literally never stops. And that gets around, you know, people talk and people know that I love the town it's a real good reception for me there. It was a lot of fun.
So it's unbelievable. And here's the thing. Like, there's guys that get their jerseys retired right now. And then there's like the Mecca, I think the Mecca star.
Yeah.
And I put Chris Chelios in that category.
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of guys having their jerseys retired in the last 5-10 years. But Chris Chelios is a Mecca,
yes.
Megastar. People ask me all the time. I was just literally just asked this 2 days ago. I was asked, you know, when I was a kid growing up, who did I look up to? Who was the guy on the playing road hockey or ice hockey? Who did I want to emulate? Who did I want to be like? And I remember saying that I wasn't really big on, you know, me being, you know, having a certain guy that I wanted to emulate. But there was a few defensemen to me growing up that, I mean, thinking back about them playing and watching them that when I was little at my home in North Bay in front of, you know, Don Cherry in between periods and hockey night in Canada were guys like Chris Chelios. Chris Chelios is always the one that I have mentioned. I've mentioned Scott Stevens. I loved Ray Bourque And I love Paul Coffey. And those were my four guys that that I watched when I grew up. And Chris Chelios was not a big guy. And he looked even smaller because of the size of the equipment that he wore. It's like he never even wore equipment.
But he's the same size today that he was in 1992 when we played in final.
I remember
Think of that.
I remember meeting him and working with him with the NHLPA stuff. And that was the first time I'd met him. And you know, I mean, I can't say I got to know him like you know him, JR, but you kind of get to know somebody and see their leadership in it, like right on display. But the first thing I did, the first thing I thought when I met him was like, I can't believe that this guy has been titled one of the most fierce competitors and toughest defensemen. And I looked at him, I was like, oh my God, this guy is pint size. And
dude, it was amazing. They were showing videos on the screen, right? And the amount of videos of him making hits, punching guys in the face in fights, his face all bloodied up. And Riv, what you said is so pinpoint, because you know, you say the mega star, right? I put him in the Gretzky, in the Messier, in that category as iconic people. And he, when you meet him, he's so unassuming, but he turns from such an unassuming guy outside the rink to an absolute fucking monster on the ice. And the competitive level there, I have never seen a competitive level like Chris Chelios. Game in,
it's almost like
out.
Every time you listen to him speak, it's like he exudes confidence in the biggest way. And believe me, I've been around, like if you guys have played in the National Hockey League, these are alpha males, okay, that have dominated and been very confident people throughout their lives to be able to fight their way to get to the highest level. And once we all come together, so you have a certain NHL hockey team, you have all of these alpha males that have been together, you know, through their youth program and juniors and everything else. Then they all come together in the NHL. And that's when you see the real alpha male that kind of, I think, takes a step above.
Well, he's the coolest of the cool.
Well, he is the alpha male,
I mean,
of the entire league.
Yes. Yes.
He is the coolest of the cool. And when you're around him,
by the way, I don't think there's been anybody before him like him or after him like him. He's still like, you know, I will say this, Ty Domi, he tries as hard as he can to be around the biggest stars of all time. And he puts them, but you know, he is always around Mario. He's always around, Beckham. He's always around Mark Wahlberg. He's always, if you're in a situation like that, if you want to find Ty Domi, just go to the biggest star that's in the room and Ty will be next to him. It's 100% for sure, which doesn't bother me, but that's how Ty is. He wants to be in the thick of things.
He's just a jock sniffer is what you're saying, JR. Ty Domi's a jock sniffer.
No, I want to be in the inn.
Yeah.
Listen, because I will tell you this, through the weekend, they had the mega stars, what we talked about, secluded from everybody else, right? Because you have to protect them. You can't put them in the same room with a lot of people because they're just, they want to have their own. So like Sidney Crawford and John McEnroe and obviously Eddie Vedder and Kidd and Mark and Wayne, they had their own box. They had their own places to go. And who's in the same box as those people was Ty, sitting right in between Gretz and Mess, you know, just in plain sight, making sure that, you know, he was seen. And you got to love Ty. I've loved Ty for a long time. You got to love him for who he is. And he's definitely a guy who likes to be in the mix. He loves the action. And he was in the action big time this weekend. But let's go even further. It was such a cool weekend because Patrick Kane was back in town for the first time since leaving the Hawks, which was so anticipated. And, you know, the Hawks played a great game. It's 2-1 with 5 minutes left in the game. right? Everybody's having a great time. And then DeBrincat scores the tying goal. You know, obviously everybody went crazy when they traded DeBrincat. Why are you trading a 25-year-old, you know, goal scorer? DeBrincat scores.
Assisted by Kane.
Assisted by Kane. And then in overtime.
From behind the net, I think. Wasn't it from behind the net?
It was kind of from the side. It snuck through. It was a terrible goal by Mrazek. Gave up a terrible goal. And then it was just, you just saw it coming. And, you know, Jones gets caught down below, tries to score a goal, makes an absolutely brutal shot right into the belly of the goaltender. And the pocket gets picked, and Patrick Kane sitting out at center ice all by himself. And when that puck got into his stick and Patrick Kane came down in a breakaway in overtime, it was like you couldn't have written a story any better. And then he put that puck at the top of the net, and everybody's heart just collapsed.
Hey,
and
he didn't just put that puck in the net, okay? He's a left-handed shot who threw that
far side.
Far side from pretty in close.
It went straight up in the top corner.
That's not an easy shot.
So the two best people that do that shot, Patrick Kane, Sidney Crosby. Okay, those are the two guys that they do that same shot. That lefty over the far side. That is a terrible hard shot. The hardest shot to do for a lefty, right, is over the top corner over the glove. And he did it, and he pulled it off. And this was the great thing. So everybody was really disappointed and booed. He was showtiming it. Showtime, which was great.
Loved his celebration, by the way.
Yep. But again, when to finish the whole weekend off on the ice, everybody left the ice. Patrick Kane waited for everybody to go in the locker room, and he came out and did another lap around. And every single person in that building, 19,000 people, were standing cheering him. And it was like one of the best signs of respect and thank yous of any circle of celebration that I've ever seen. And that was the second time. Cause in the first period they did how they go back and they do like a
tribute.
They did a tribute to Patrick Kane in the first period in the second commercial break. Now it's commercial break is three minutes. They played a quick 30-second video of Patrick in Chicago. Everybody stood and started roaringly applauding. Patrick Kane came out, did a circle, put a stick in the air. Thank you. Goes back to the bench. The crowd got louder. So Patrick came back out for a second turn, went back to the bench, and the crowd continued to stay as loud. And the players pushed him back out again. And he came out for the third time. He came out to center ice. Yeah. And they cheered him the entire 3 minutes of that commercial break. And it was mind blowing.
Well, I know Riv wants to get to a very specific thing that Chelios said about Pat Kane, but before we go and skip through that, I want to just say one thing. He talked about how difficult it was going back, dressing in the other locker room, taking the other warm up on the other side, kind of all that stuff. Can you relate to that in any way?
I've talked to Craig. 100%. I was that guy. I was Patrick Kane in 1997 when I went back. 100%. Know exactly every emotion, every feeling, every all the smells, the weird vibe, the sadness, the sorrow, the excitement of seeing friends, the nerves. It's just
How hard is it to do that, to be that guy? Was that a tough day for you? Like being able to take in all those emotions and then have to go out and perform?
When I landed on the plane and got off the plane, I started getting nauseous, like sick, like nerve sick. And it stayed with me all the way until I left the arena after the game. It was really, really difficult, really, really emotional. It was good and bad all at the same time, but, and relieved when it was all over.
I was going to say, is there a point where you're just kind of like, oh my God, I can't wait for this day to be over. It doesn't matter how the game goes. Like obviously you just want to go out and play well, but
yes, no question. And I'm sure Patrick has a love for that city and that those fans. It was one of the hardest decisions that he had to do to leave. But yeah,
you they want made that. Him wait with the Chelios thing, though. They had to make him wait and sit through all those nerves and sit on the bench and watch a legend and see how it's done, because his day's coming in Chicago.
But oh, 100%. And Chelly said that. He said, you're going to be here one day. Yeah. You're going to have the same thing. So just remember how I look doing it. It was
he
really
also
cool.
said something else, though, didn't he, Craig?
Best American player of all time. That he's going to be the best American player of all time.
He did say that.
He will never be as iconic as Chelios. I don't care how many points he gets. You know, Chris Chelios is the most iconic American of all time and will continue to be. Austin Matthews will go down as the best goal scorer of all time. But I think when you talk about sheer talent and whether Patrick Kane catches Mike Modano for points, still remains to be seen. Obviously, he's on a roll to do that. He's still got probably another year or two to play.
Well, what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't catch Mike Modano? Does that mean, like, is he still going down as the best U.S.-born hockey player?
No.
So was Chelios just saying that for the moment? And I'm not saying he's wrong. Maybe he does believe that. I'm not saying he's wrong. But, I mean, there's a few other American-born players.
Well, there are some people that really think that Patrick Kane will be, and maybe Chelios is one of them. And he has the opportunity to become the all-time leading scorer in American history. Plus, he has three cups. Plus, he has all the everythings, which is fine. Mike Modano right now holds that in terms of talent player. He has the most points. He has a Stanley Cup. I think he's the guy to knock off the totem pole, but.
Well, I agree with that. And that's where I was going with this is, I mean, I don't give a shit what Austin Matthews does, how many goals he scores until he wins three cups or at least a cup. I mean, he's not in that discussion with Patrick Kane, in my opinion. It doesn't matter.
Say that again.
Austin Matthews, doesn't matter how many goals he gets, how many points he gets.
Okay, yes,
if he doesn't win a Stanley Cup, there's no discussion. He could outscore Kane. He could outpoint him. I don't give a shit what he does. If he doesn't win, it's not even a discussion.
No, not even a discussion. Patrick Kane is smoother than Austin Matthews. He's a better playmaker than Austin Matthews. I think he's more dynamic in terms of his elusiveness, his.
This could be risky to say, but I think he's a smarter player. I'm not saying Matthews isn't smart. I'm saying I just think Pat Kane.
Matthews is more tenacious. Yes, I would say IQ wise for sure. Both of them are extremely smart. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a minute.
Let me put it to you this way, JR. And this you said something about a couple minutes ago, which kind of set me thinking. When we're talking about Patrick Kane, we're talking about the best passer in U.S. history. The only other player that you can really look at is Mike Modano, correct?
Mike Modano, correct.
Mike Modano in 1,500 games.
Two best saucer passer passers.
Yes.
In the history of the game.
Yes. So in 1,500 games, Modano had 813 assists. In almost 300 less games, Patrick Kane has 804. So when you look at that, it's clearly, I mean, Patrick Kane, if he played 300 more games, would have, you know, shit ton more assists, right? So, and then here's where I'm going with this. And this is why it was surprising to me that you said that Austin Matthews is going to be the best U.S.-born goal scorer in the history of the game. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking to myself, who are the best goal scorers? Who are the best goal scorers? And I'm going through it, and there's not a lot of names that are popping into my head for because I know that you scored over 500, and I'm trying to think, who are the goal scorers? And then all of a sudden, I had
Joe
to
Mullen.
Look it up. No. How about our boy
Pat LaFontaine?
No, Brett Hull.
No, he's not American born. He was born in Canada. He's
American.
No, he's Canadian born.
No,
didn't he practically renounce his hockey Canadian citizenship when he played for Team USA? So we as Canadians, I consider Brett Hull American. Brett, you can have him.
Yeah, he wasn't picked for the 87, I think for the 87 rendezvous team or whatever. And that pissed him off. And I think there was another one that he wasn't picked for, whether it was a world championships in 89 or something. And he's just like, you guys don't want me. I'm going to go play in America.
Did he play on Canada Cup?
So 91? What you're telling me right now,
with me.
Yes. 91, he was in the US. Okay. So he might've not played Canada Cup 87 when Lemieux went shelf on Tretiak.
In 91. That's right. In 91, when I played with him in the Canada Cup was the first time it was where I fell in love with Brett Hull. In 1991, I felt like totally fell in love with him. I got my son's name, Brett, because I love the guy. He's just an amazing. He was there this weekend too. It was just awesome to see him too. But yes, you could say he's American, but he's American by mother born, right? Because of his mom. He's not
same as Pominville.
We take him as an American for sure because his goal scoring ability is, and what he did for us is amazing. So
yes, of course you do.
He's really not an American, is what you're saying.
He's born in Winnipeg. What do you want?
Let's be real. This guy is a Canadian raised American player ever. We'll title him that way.
Okay. So, Pat LaFontaine. Would have been up there. You look at Pat LaFontaine's stats. If it wasn't for his concussion problems, Pat LaFontaine would have definitely been in that goal scoring lead ahead of Modano.
Yeah. Yes. But anyway, I was just looking at Brett Hull. He scored 741 goals, which is just absolutely mind blowing. And
I think Austin Matthews will catch that.
JR, I have to ask you a question.
He's got a long way to go, though. Austin Matthews still is, 350. And, listen, this all comes down to one thing. We talk about Alex Ovechkin having an opportunity to beat Gretzky. He has that opportunity because he stayed healthy. He stayed healthy for a large part of his career. Now, Austin Matthews, if he stays healthy, will have an opportunity to be in the mix trying to beat Wayne Gretzky and Alex Ovechkin, but it's all about staying healthy, right? For these.
Yeah. He's never going to catch Alex. He's not going to catch Alex. I think he has what, 160 goal season and then the rest 40s.
Yeah.
Alex was 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50. Right. But still as Americans go, he's got 350 some odd goals already. In 538 games. I mean, just think of that. If he plays 1,500 games like Mike Modano did, he's going to get another 450, 500. Close.
He plays. He'll hit 800.
Listen, if he continue. Now, this is the thing. Austin Matthews needs to stay healthy and he needs to continue to be insanely committed to doing this. And if he does, then he's going to have an opportunity. I mean, I could see Austin Matthews for the next 5 years scoring 60 goals a year. That's how dominant he is right now.
Yes.
So it's going to be fun to watch because looking at Alex Ovechkin, I would have never in a million years thought someone would come close and be in the mix to even talk in the same breath as a Gretzky / Ovechkin goal scoring. But now all of a sudden you have Austin Matthews that's doing incredible things. And if he stays consistent, it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely right. So as Americans go, I think Patrick Kane is, most likely will catch Modano. I don't know how many points Modano finished with in his career. How much?
374.
How much?
374.
How many points did Mike Modano finish with?
Mike Modano ended with 1,374. Sorry. Just missed 1,000 there.
Forgot the one.
Yeah, forgot the one. Yeah. 1,374.
I would like to think I would have caught Medano if it wasn't for all my injuries. I played what, 1,350 games. He played what, 1,550 games. He's got 200 games on me. It would have been close.
It would have been close. Yeah.
It would have been close. But you know, I led Mike Medano in points. I had more points than him up until I think 2004, 2005, 2005. And then he took off from there. So I had a nice lead on him for 18 years. It's pretty, or seven. Yeah. Let's talk, 16 years.
Looking for a night out, maybe go watch a game at a bar. Maybe even have a nice fancy dinner. Who knows? I might even get crazy and play some bets while I'm at it. And there's only one place to do all that. Only at Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. You can hit up Stick Sports Bar and Grill, grab an unbelievable steak at the Western Door, gamble at the casino, or even play some bets at the sportsbook. All in one location at Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close.
So it's pouring rain this morning and I'm driving down the road and this car is flying down the road and it starts hydroplaning. It starts fishtailing. I thought for sure I was going to get hit. And I'm not even joking. Before I even got hit, all I'm thinking about is 888-888-8888. Try to remember that number after you get hit here. Luckily, we avoided a collision. Very grateful for that. But I almost want to call Celino Law for the trauma that this guy put me in. But if you are the unfortunate one that ends up getting in an accident and you get injured, grab your phone, call the AIDS, 888-888-8888. Almost car crash, don't call Celino. Car crash, call Celino. Let's talk about another American-born player, Brady Tkachuk. There are rumors that he's available. Is there?
Wow.
I couldn't even imagine.
Get the hell out of here. Where the hell did you hear that?
Bowels of the internet.
Wow.
Now, I hope you're not trying to get the first on the rumor mill. And I called this one first, like a lot of Canadian media do, try to float something. But that would be, or maybe it wouldn't be. Look what happened with Matthew. If that's the case, that would have to be Brady Tkachuk going into the offices and say, listen, I need out of here. I can't stay here anymore. I want to trade. And I don't see Brady doing that. But Matthew did it in Calgary and they traded him. What's their contract situation like? What's Brady's contract situation?
Right? He's got another 5 years. What, he signed 7 for 7 or something like that?
So he's kind of stuck there.
I think he makes 8.
He might make 8. Yeah,
makes 8.5. Both him and Matthew make the same. I think it's 8.5.
Matthew makes 9.5.
Is it 9.5 now this year? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just – listen, I think that's bullshit. That would be, like you said, that would be a bad move for the franchise. However, if he wants out, you get a shit ton for him.
Huh. I would literally trade half of the Buffalo team to get him.
That's fantastic. Line of the show.
I'm not joking whatsoever. If Ottawa is in a situation where they want to try and continue to rebuild with younger players that are highly talented, we've got a shit ton of kids.
Hey, you know what you do? You keep Dahlin, you keep Tuck, you keep Tage, you get rid of Paterka, right? And then you get rid of everybody else in the trade and you bring up the minors to come up. And
do you have any idea
team.
How many first round young prospects they have? Centermen out the ass. They have so many players. Well, they drafted 3 centermen in one draft a few years ago. They had 3 draft picks in the first round. They picked all centermen, all under 6 feet, but all centermen.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's no way they can't all play here.
All of them are doing well, JR. Like Matt Savoy got drafted 9th overall. Boom, gone, sending it to Ottawa. Then they had 16th pick overall, Noah Oslin. He's playing in the Swedish Elite League. Had an unbelievable World Junior, JR. Gone, bye. And then Jari Kulich is in the minors right now. 19-year-old kid playing in the minors, playing very, very well. Goal scorer, was an absolute stud for the Czech team in the World Juniors. Gone, sending him to. You can have them all for Fuck. Brady.
If I were Edmonton, I'd be sending Draisaitl straight up for Brady Tkachuk. Straight up. Changes their team.
Brady Tkachuk does not really want to go to Edmonton. He wants out of Canada. He wants to go to the States.
Holy fuck. What the fuck did you just say right there?
I'm gonna instantly delete that out. That's the first line I'm deleting out of the show today.
Listen.
I'm going straight.
I love Brady Tkachuk.
I'm going straight.
But when we're talking Leon Draisaitl, let's get something straight.
Brady Kachuk's going right back to Phoenix, right where he grew up. Come on. Right to Phoenix, baby. Let's go.
Is he married?
Yes, he's married. He just got married.
What does that have to do with it? Why'd you give the old off?
Well, because if I were that young and I'd be enrolling on campus and I just wouldn't go to school. I'd be living right there.
Yes, you would.
I'd be living on
like how much campus. Money you just pay? You'd pay five times what it would cost just to be in the dorms.
Yeah, just.
I will pay $100,000 just allow Mr. me to Peters, stay in the dorms.
Mr. Peters, well, if I'm making 8.2, I would. I'd be, Mr. Peters, you need to come pick up your books. No. There's no class involved.
You would even pay $100,000 and accept a roommate.
Okay, so there is a conversation I wanted to kind of blindside you both with today. And I think it's right up your alley, JR. And I told Craig I wanted to bring something up. Clearly, you're aware of what's going on with the New York Rangers and Matt Rempe. You've heard the legend of Rempe?
Yes, of course. Actually, okay. One of the ladies I went out to dinner with last night, a friend of my wife's, is very good friends with Matt Rempe's sister. So it was kind of weird. I'm out here in California and there's like a connection with my friends here in California and Matt Rempe. And that's all I've talked about on my show the other day and a couple other shows is this kid that has just come in and taken the fight to the National Hockey League, which has been amazing.
Well, this is, I love the way you said that, the fight to the National Hockey League, because Craig and I talked about it yesterday. And, you know, I said to Craig, what's the league going to do about it? And I don't even want to have that discussion with it. But for me, it's the hypocrisy that surrounds hockey that drives me nuts, because for someone that did what I did, to hear people tear my job and my role and purpose, not me specifically, but the guys that did it, to shreds, to say, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. And now you have, and listen, there's a little bit of anger in here, so you have to excuse my wording, but you have these fucking weasels that are now out there tweeting about how this is great. Watch this fight of the decade. You know, I don't condone this, but everybody should watch this. And it drives me fucking nuts, because these are the same people that were just said, get rid of it. These guys are useless. And I'm going to tell you something. Matt Rempe has absolutely served a massive purpose.
Well, not only that, but he has engaged so many hockey fans and non-hockey fans into the viewing aspect on social media. And whether you like it or not, the National Hockey League has benefited from his ability to do what he does, and that is fight. And that is what people
all three
have been
fights were
for.
Staged, JR. All three fights were staged. Maybe they didn't drop the gloves right off the thing. So my point is that are we okay with this now?
You use the word and it's the most frustrating word in the whole English dictionary is hypocrisy. Who doesn't like a good fight? Like, seriously, if two men want to go at it and fight, that's their own prerogative. Like, you're really worried about what a kid is going to think or the detriment it's going to show on a kid. You know what? That's where the parents come in. It's part of the game. It's been part of the game for generations, and it should still be part of the game now. And God bless Rempe for coming and bringing a little zest and fire and energy to the New York Rangers and to the National Hockey League. He's on how many there's more Remke videos on social media now than any other player, with the exception of maybe Patrick Kane or
that DeLaurier, maybe, Remke went. What's all-
it's sick. He's had four fights. Three of them have been probably the best fights in the last 10 years. Literally.
Yes.
I mean, and you have to applaud that.
He's had some in the minors, JR, that are like legendary too. Like this is this guy is going to stand back and he's going to throw hammers. And it's incredible to watch. Like the fight against Nick DeLaurier, who is arguably right now the number one or number two toughest man in this league. It was a gladiator fight. They were pounding each other.
It was unreal.
Punches to the face, both of them. And it was like one of the, could you imagine the fans in that building watching that? Like they must have been going absolutely crazy.
Nuts. And that's my point. So that was a three watch video. You watched that three times. You didn't just watch that fight once. You watched it three or four times.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you a question. Who are the hypocrites worried about? Are they worried about the two gentlemen that are fighting? Oh, I hope they don't hurt themselves. It's not good for them. They're laughing.
Well, they're talking smiling. About everybody's talking about, well, look at this young man. He's 21 years old. How dare they allow him to fight because he could get CTE if he gets punched in the head. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? He's going to be making fucking $750,000, making as much as some doctors. And
don't.
And I'm just like,
hold on a second.
Everybody understands the risks.
But this
everybody understands the risks.
This is what I'm saying. Worry about your fucking self.
Well, then don't turn on Saturday college football and Sunday college football.
Worry about your fucking self. Don't sit here and say it shouldn't happen because, oh, I'm afraid he's going to hurt himself. Guess what?
It affects.
That man knows what he's doing. He accepts the situation. He accepts the repercussions. He accepts what's going to happen to him. And look at the smile on his face in the locker room with bruises all over himself. Yeah. And the guy's the happiest guy in the world. Like, don't worry about Remke. So who are these people? Who are these people that are saying this?
The Corsi numbers. What does it do for the Corsi? What does it do for the graphs? What does it do for... What does it do for the skill of the game? We want goals. We want guys that.
I got to tell you a story. I have to tell you a story.
Just honest to God, there are people that cover this game that really need to just shut the fuck up.
I have to tell you a story. Okay. What really matters to the National Hockey League is the people that are in that building, first and foremost, who are paying those high price tickets to put their asses in those seats. Okay. The people that are watching it at home, so on and so forth, still are important. But you talk about the fights. When those guys are fighting on the ice, there's not a person in that building that's not standing cheering. Maybe one or two. I was at a Chicago game last Wednesday. It was Philadelphia versus the Hawks. And there are three kids sitting two rows behind me. And the whole game, these three kids, I think they're 9, 10, 11 years old, fight, fight, fight. And they're yelling, fight, fight, fight. And the parents are right there, right with them. And they're like, fight, fight. And they're hoping for the fights. And the parents are laughing. That's accepted. It's like, why do you go to a boxing match? Why do you love boxing? Why do you go to boxing? Why haven't they banned boxing? Because people go there understanding and liking the fact of the fight. You can't stop it or say this because you're afraid that it's going to tarnish, you know, some liberal kid's brain.
Here's what I'm waiting for, JR. I'm waiting for the day that the Sabres accept the fact, and I have to bring this back to Buffalo. I'm just waiting for the day that the Sabres actually accept the fact that they have to go out and get more physical. Do you know why? Because that will mean that they will have to have accepted what we have been saying for years, and we are going to become instant fucking legends in this town because the Sabres finally did what we told them to or have been asking them to for years, and then they start winning.
You're going to take credit for that?
Well, every game they win, I mean, we basically coach them back. they lose, they listen, they win. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just how it works sometimes.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know, eventually though, they'll come around. And but it's just, to me, man, it's like I see all these people praising that Delorier fight, and I thought the fight was incredible with Rempe. But the fact of the matter is, I'm just like, I start looking at the people writing who's praising this fight, and you were the same people saying that we didn't need this in the game.
Yeah.
That the game doesn't need this, but yet it is the most, it's more watched than fucking a backhand toe drag shelf goal that was scored the same night.
Could you imagine if they bring back more fighting and more physicality to the talent that these guys have now, how popular this game would be? It would be insanity.
Well, it's interesting that the Blue Jackets, you know, they had a little run there where Rempe absolutely crushed the guy in the Devils, laid him out. He had a great fight the next night against the Philadelphia Flyers, Nick Delorier. Then he walks into Columbus Blue Jackets and fights a really tough customer. And what's his name, Petey? Oliver?
Matthew Olivier.
Olivier. And here's the thing. Guess who the Rangers play next? The Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and they play Olivier. And you know what? I mean, Olivier got the best of Rempe in that fight. He smoked him with a punch that, you know, obviously gave him the black eye. And
okay, let me ask you this. Are we going to let this happen? This fight happen?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And let me go even a step further. So that Blue Jackets Ranger rematch, as much as we want to say this, let me ask you this question. Do you think anybody cares about the Rangers playing the Columbus Blue Jackets on February 28th?
Not one.
Not one person. But let me tell you something. I think there's a lot of people that are actually going to watch that game just to see if Olivier and Rempe fight again.
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
So that's today, JR. Then all of a sudden, the Rangers' next game is on Saturday, March 2nd. This Saturday, guess who they play?
Columbus.
Flyers.
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, Ryan Reeves just scored last night.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Reeves can put his goal scoring mitts away because he's been chirping and he's been going after guys since he came in the league. And now all of a sudden you got Ryan Reeves is 35 years old. You got a kid who's 21, who's trying to make a name for himself.
I'm pretty sure if Rempe fights Olivier tonight, he's not going to grab him the same way.
Exactly. It's going to be done a little differently. Yeah. Listen, as much as goal scorers watch on video, what they can do better, how they can pull pucks, drag pucks, shoot pucks, fighters always go over their fights. They go over and critique
that's an interesting comment, because all we've seen from Reeves is him bitch slapping other people, bitch slapping Corey Perry. He's not that tough. Bitch slapping this, bitch slapping that, you know, acting like the tough guy. Now there's a tough guy there. Do you think Ryan Reeves goes over and says, okay, kid, just like Matt, Matt Martin did.
Yeah.
Okay, kid, your first game, I'm going to give you the shot. Here's your shot. Let's go. Which I thought was awesome by
if Rempe by asks Matt Martin. Reeves.
No, if Reeves says, okay, let's go, kid. If Reeves makes the first call, not Rempe. I want Reeves to make the first call because he's the one that's been chirping his mouth all over the place over the last little while. So he claims to be the tough guy. He claims to be that, you know, this guy's not tough. This guy's not tough. Well, you got a tough guy right in front of you now. Are you going to go keep your belt, or are you going to go challenge the young guy who's coming up?
Well, you look at Nick Delorier. Nick Delorier has always been honest. He's played the game very hard. He knows his role. He's a fourth line checking physical guy that adds energy and he adds spunk to a team. And he understood what Rempe is all about. He's a young guy, played in the minors, has fought, had some really good fights. And Nick Delorier said, yeah, let's get this going. This is what the game, or my game, is all about. It was an unbelievable fight of the year, without question, guys were hammering each other. That being said, now you have a little bit of clout around this Rempy kid who's 6'8", 200 and whatever.
By the
pounds.
Way, you have more excitement in Madison Square Garden, wherever that team goes. You don't just have Panarin, you don't just have Zibanejad, you don't just have Kreider, you don't just have Fox. Now you get to look at somebody else that is in a different category of entertainment. Again,
that's right.
more tickets sold, more people watching. Rempy has been a good thing for the New York Rangers and the National Hockey League, period. End of sentence. I don't care about all the libs that don't like fighting. Sorry. It's there. Yeah. It's been there forever. Suck it up, pajama boys.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, the last thing I'll say is this young man is 21 years old. He's 6'7", 6'8". It looks like they have him down as 205 pounds. apparently I think he's 240.
He's right? Not 205. Gosh.
He's 240 pounds. I looked at it must've been when he was 12 years old, but, he's 6'8", 240 pounds. And he is only going to get stronger. He's 21 years old. And if you remember when you were 20, and I know when I was 21 years old, I was 10 times stronger at the age of 24, 25. 10 well, times.
I'll just say this. This league still has some tough players in it. And if he doesn't get his lights punched out on his way in and out very early, he's got to become a little bit of a different fighter. In my opinion, he's way too aggressive. And he's going to get hurt. And if there's a time for these guys to run the gauntlet on him, it's now, because Olivier got him wobbling big time. Big time. He went to the...
Yeah, and you pointed that out in that fight, Petey, right away when we were talking about it. He says he's got to learn to protect himself when he doesn't have the right grab. Rempy, when he was fighting Olivier, grabbed him, but he had the jersey on the left side of his...
He grabbed too far. You got to
grab in the middle.
Left shoulder. Yeah.
And then it's like if he gets the right grab, then he is a big problem for a lot of guys because his arms are so long.
That's an interesting concept, because what you're seeing in fighting a lot now, and I would love to hear your take on this, Petey. It seems like a lot of guys now make that grab in the collar in the front because they throw that little left jab which stuns guys. Because when I fought, I mean, I had 44 fights in National Hockey League. I didn't not fight. I had 44, and I would always grab for the arm sleeve.
Yes.
to control their power arm so they couldn't really hit me with a strong one. But these guys are doing it a little different. Is it for the fact of they're not doing it properly, or for different tactics?
Different tactics. I mean, I used to like when guys would do that because it took away from their throwing hand. You want to jab me with that thing? Go ahead and jab me, because you can't throw both at the same time, right? So if you're going to sit there and go like this, you're not throwing your right. But once that stops, what's coming? The hammer's coming, right?
Yeah.
So I used to always like to plant my left hand right in the guy's shoulder. Like right in the shoulder. So if he threw a punch, you just kind of lean into it, and it keeps that. You just can't punch through a locked arm, right? But there are some bad grabs, man. I've had some bad holds where you're just kind of like, I'm fucked here, and I gotta just try to survive. Like you grab under a guy's armpit sometimes, and
that's what happened. That's what happened with me with Walker. I fought Walker in Vancouver, and
yeah, very tough kid.
Yeah, very tough. I don't know if you guys seen the fight. I think you might have seen it. He was throwing so fast, and I was trying to throw as much. I couldn't grab his power arm, and I'm literally sitting there, please don't get knocked out. And literally I'm like, just don't get knocked out. He hit me with two bombs. I swear to God, I cannot believe I did not go down. But Scott Walker hit me with two bombs. Because I couldn't grab, and one came over the top. I mean, if you see this fight, it is.
He was so tough.
He was so tough.
He was so tough.
And by the way, I had 45 goals that season, like 90 points or 85 points. And here I am fighting Scott Walker in Vancouver.
It's a good trade-off for Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah. You exactly. YouTube it. Riv, you take a look at the bombs that I get hit with on this guy. And
yeah, I'm watching it now.
And it was, I'm throwing as hard as I can, but I couldn't get a hold of his arm. And he's just standing steady and throwing, and I'm just flailing. Oh.
How did you not go down with that punch, JR?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I've seen this fight. I can't bring myself to go back and watch it again.
Oh my god. Yeah. How are you still standing?
Yeah, and but my favorite part of the video is I go to the penalty box and I'm chewing my gum. I didn't have a mouthpiece in, had nothing. I'm chewing gum. I go back to the bench, fixing my pads, chewing the gum. But I got a really nice compliment from the broadcasters. Like, what, you got to give JR a little credit. There's a goal scorer fighting. You know, he held his ground. I literally got tattooed twice in that fight and didn't go down. That was my favorite fight that I had.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you were, for people that want to watch this fight, it's a good fight to watch. It's Jeremy Roenick against Scott Walker. Go and look at this, 1997, April 9th. And let me tell you something. He landed some massive, massive bombs to your face, and you did not go down. I cannot. Your head must be made of rocks, man. Oh,
dude.
But this is what we're talking about, JR, about. Like, in that fight, why do you think that you need to go punch for punch with him? Why wouldn't you want to try and just say, let's calm things down here. I'm going to protect myself, and I'm going to wait until I can grab him properly. You went like you wanted to knock him out.
That's how I live my life. Well, I live my life in gear five, buddy. I don't live my life in second gear. I live my life in gear five, and there's no governor.
Good for you.
So if I'm doing it, I'm going all in. I don't go in just to be a participant. No, thank you.
You are awesome. The epitome of go hard or go home, JR.
Go hard or go home. You don't go in half ass. You don't go in second gear. You go in with both feet. And you're cocked and ready to go, no matter what it brings you.
Well,
no.
Last thing I'll say before we let you go, this has been a great hour. Last night, an incredible feat, actually. Sidney Crosby, 1,000th even strength point.
Unbelievable. 5 points over the weekend. This guy is trying to will his team into the playoffs. It's still not going to happen. You got to wonder. I had this conversation on my podcast on Monday, our Snipes and Stripes weekend edition, because Sidney Crosby again just blew it out of the water. And we're talking about, is this the end of Sidney Crosby in terms of Pittsburgh and wanting to be in Pittsburgh? Because this will be the second year that he doesn't make the playoffs in a row after being one of the longest standing teams to make the playoffs in all of sports. With, you know, Malkin is on his downside, Letang's on his downside. You got to think that the big R word has to happen in Pittsburgh now, the rebuild. And Sidney Crosby does not want to hear that word rebuild. I also hear that some of the players are turning on Mike Sullivan as coach. Shit show. I don't think Sidney Crosby wants to be any part of a shit show or a rebuild. Is this kind of getting close to Sidney's end? I don't know. He's still putting up points like crazy. I feel terrible.
Does he play out his contract or does he get traded? He's got two more years.
But can you see Sidney Crosby going to play for another team? I don't.
Well, listen, I mean, could you see Wayne Gretzky not being an Edmonton Oiler? Yes. And he went and played for how many teams after that? LA, St. Louis. Rangers. I mean, he left Yarmir Yager.
He left the Oilers at like 29, 30. Crosby's what? 34, 35. So he's right at the end. Like, this is,
no, Crosby's
this is
older
Gretzky
than that.
On the range.
Crosby's here. 38, 37.
Yeah, 37.
Holy shit, he's 37. This is Gretzky on the Rangers, man. Gretzky retired at 39.
Well, what about Yarmir Yager?
And he's actually, this guy's putting up. What about, well, that's,
what about
that's
Mark
what
Messier?
I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying is these guys want to win Stanley Cups. And if it's not going to work out in Pittsburgh, then why wouldn't Sidney Crosby, who's still playing at an insane level, why wouldn't you want to kind of move on to try and be in a better chance to win?
Yes, 100%.
He lived with Mario. Mario stuck it through. Mario came back and played with Sid for the rebuild. You know, he played one team his entire career. There's something to be said for that.
Okay, but when did Mario retire?
Now, Mario's not there anymore, so who knows if that even matters to him.
I think what Riv just said is a great, I think, reason for Sidney Crosby to leave. Hey, the greatest players in the game played for multiple teams. The greatest, with the exception of Mario. So, you know, that is an out. But there's no way, in my opinion, there's no way that Sidney Crosby will sit there on that team and play his ass off and train his ass off to be a part of a rebuild. I just don't see it happening.
Well, why is there so much talk, JR, about Getzel? Like, why are we talking about Jake Getzel at the age of 29? If Sidney Crosby is sitting there and he's seeing arguably the best goal scorer on the team, okay, one of the best players on the team walk out because they don't want to pay him, then what is Sidney Crosby thinking? You know, they went and paid Evgeny Malkin, which, again, Evgeny Malkin is a year older than Sidney Crosby. They gave him three more years.
That was a thank you contract.
Yeah, but that's horseshit contract. Like, I don't, like, why not trade away Malkin and move him and get assets? Why not move on from Erik Karlsson, who's 33 years old, making $10 million a year?
You're not going to get as much in terms of a rebuild compensation package for them as you will for a Jake Guentzel. You're going to get younger players,
but I think
you're going to get draft picks. You're going to get, if you're going to go for the real rebuild, you got to go for the real rebuild. And that, in doing that, that is, it's almost like the same situation as what the Hawks did with DeBrincat. Now the Hawks still suck, and who knows what's going to happen with what they got with DeBrincat in terms of their draft choices. But that seems to be the mentality that these GMs go in around the league these days. I don't know.
I just think, you know, right now when you look at Sidney, he's 36 years old. He's going to be turning 37. I think it's like July or August is his birthday. I think he could play till he's 40 all day long. That's another 3-4 years at a high level. My question is, you know, is it going to be with the Pittsburgh? I mean, Pittsburgh right now seem like they're just so old. You got Malkin at 37.
I have to imagine if he goes anywhere, probably goes and tries to figure out a way to play with McKinnon in Colorado.
Yeah, it's a good, great point. That's his buddy.
Colorado's going to be good for a lot of years. Crosby can slide right in there. There's no pressure for him to be the man.
JR, what would you have to give up if you're Colorado Avalanche? Because it's funny that you bring them up, Petey, because they're looking currently right now for a number two center.
Well, they're not. Crosby's like, okay, we're not doing this. JR, agree with me. We're not, or are we doing this? This look on your face is like, yeah, let's fucking do this.
Well, what's Sidney Crosby's contract left?
He has this year at 8.7. He's going to finish off this year. He has next year at 8.7.
He's making 8.7.
Cap hits 8.7. It's like $3 million or something. He's making like $3 million.
Wow.
Isn't he, Riv? Is that how it works?
What a steal.
Why couldn't, if you have McKinnon, Rantanen, and players along this nature, Kale McCarr, their defense core, they have great goaltending. They are in a situation that they are in it right now. Their time to win Stanley Cups is now. Why wouldn't you try and do everything in your power to try and get a guy like this?
Now, would you think to try to get a guy like this at trade deadline or summertime going into next season? Because I think if you're Colorado right now, you don't want to mess with your team because you probably have one of the best chances to win the Stanley Cup this year with the team they have.
Fuck. Are you kidding me? You can't tell me that you wouldn't want Sidney Crosby on that quest for a cup?
Not right now. Next year. That's a next year deadline move.
I agree with you. I think it's a next year move. I think
they
it's
see what they can
move.
Do with the team now.
Because I think Sidney Crosby, if he goes to Colorado and he plays there, I think it's obviously one of the most beautiful places to live with the most sun days in the United States.
Sunny days.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Hey, well, listen, you got hit in the head a lot of times, Petey. You don't really know whether you're being facetious or not sometimes.
No, bullshit. It's Craig I'm worried about.
But I will tell you this. If Jake Guentzel gets traded at the trade deadline with these rumors, I'm going to bet Sidney Crosby is going to leave soon after. How's that?
I could see that.
Boom. No rebuild for Sidney Crosby. Thank you very much. Next.
Thanks for today, JR.
Yeah. Awesome, boys. Thanks, boys.